What if the most important decisions of your life and of our collective future could be made better through a set of learnable skills? In 2011, when Navy SEALs stormed Osama bin Laden's compound in Abbottabad, the world celebrated a daring military operation. Yet the true marvel wasn't just the 40-minute raid, but the 9 months of deliberation that preceded it, a process that transformed uncertain intelligence into decisive action. Stephen Johnson's Farsighted has become required reading in boardrooms and government offices precisely because it reveals this hidden dimension of decision-making. Endorsed by Bill Gates as a thoughtful guide to an increasingly important topic, the book arrives at a critical moment when humanity faces unprecedented choices about climate change, artificial intelligence, and global cooperation. Drawing on centuries of human experience, from Darwin's marriage deliberations to modern forecasting techniques, Johnson reveals how the quality of our decisions, not just their outcomes, shapes the arc of both personal lives and civilization itself. 10,000 years ago, glacial melt created the Narrows, forming New York Bay, a blessing for navigation but a curse for fresh water access. Early Manhattan residents relied on Collect Pond, a tranquil oasis fed by underground springs. By 1789, as pollution from nearby tanneries threatened this vital resource, concerned citizens proposed preserving it as a public park. The plan failed when investors doubted the city would expand northward, and by 1802, authorities decided to fill the pond with earth from nearby Bunker Hill. This decision proved catastrophically short-sighted. The luxury homes built atop the former pond began sinking as underground microorganisms decomposed organic material, emitting putrid odors. Basements flooded, typhus outbreaks occurred, and wealthy residents fled. The neighborhood deteriorated into Five Points, America's most notorious slum. Had the park plan succeeded, Manhattan might today enjoy an urban oasis rivaling Boston Common. The Collect Pond disaster exemplifies what happens when we fail to see the full complexity of a decision. When General Washington defended New York in 1776, he made a similar error, leaving Jamaica Pass virtually unguarded while heavily defending other routes. The British exploited this blind spot with a devastating flanking maneuver, leading to New York's capture. Washington's most brilliant decision came only in the evacuation that saved his army after the battle was lost. Complex decisions present unique challenges. They involve multiple interacting variables, require full-spectrum analysis across different frames of reference, force us to predict uncertain futures, harbor undiscovered options, and are vulnerable to cognitive biases. Unlike choosing ketchup brands, complex decisions demand multidisciplinary thinking, shifting between forensic evidence, legal precedent, and witness psychology when serving on a jury, rather than retreating to simplistic assessments. Effective decision-making begins with building accurate mental maps, sometimes literal ones like the 3D model built for the Abbottabad compound raid, sometimes metaphorical. Decision theorists use influence diagrams to visualize how effects ripple through interconnected systems. The Collect Pond example demonstrates how impact pathways rarely run in straight lines. What seems like a simple choice between nature and development actually connects numerous factors in complex ways. Every far-sighted decision requires its own unique map. And developing the wisdom to see situations as they truly are demands different pairs of eyes on the problem. The Vancouver Water Authority demonstrated this approach when facing water shortage decisions, consulting diverse stakeholders, from local residents to indigenous peoples, environmental activists to recreational users. This collaborative deliberation process makes it harder for complex decisions to be evaluated from a single narrow perspective. Counterintuitively, small group meetings often work better than large gatherings by preserving independent thinking. Having committee members write brief position summaries before discussion prevents early, assertive speakers from dominating. The power of diversity is so strong that even adding perspectives without relevant expertise improves decision-making. Samuel Summers' mock jury experiments showed racially diverse juries considered more interpretations, remembered information more accurately, and deliberated more rigorously than homogeneous ones. Catherine Phillips' research revealed that diverse teams were both more accurate in solving mysteries and less confident in their conclusions, a productive combination. This mirrors the fire commander in Gary Klein's research, who saved lives by recognizing patterns didn't fit his expectations rather than claiming perfect insight. The wisdom in decision-making often lies in identifying blank spots on our mental maps. Environmental scholars identify 13 distinct forms of uncertainty, but for most purposes, these fall into three categories: knowable unknowns, addressable through better information; inaccessible unknowns, information that exists but we can't access; and unknowable unknowns, inherently unpredictable elements. The Bin Laden raid exemplifies effective uncertainty management. Analysts were required to rate their confidence levels, with career officers who experienced the Iraq WMD intelligence failure showing appropriate caution. Officials deliberately challenged assumptions, demanding analysts generate alternative explanations for suspicious behaviors. Effective decision-making requires not just interpreting available information, but actively seeking new options. Paul Nutt's groundbreaking research revealed that only 15% of organizational decisions involved a deliberate search for alternatives beyond the initial choices presented. Most decisions consider only one option, essentially asking whether or not rather than which one. This limited approach proves disastrous. Decisions considering only one alternative failed more than 50% of the time, while those contemplating multiple paths succeeded 2/3 of the time. Manhattan's High Line illustrates how transformative options often emerge from unexpected sources. What began as an abandoned railway viaduct, once called Death Avenue for its deadly collisions between trains and street-level traffic, was slated for demolition after its final freight run in 1980. For nearly a decade, the decision was framed as a binary whether or not choice about demolition responsibility, with city officials and property owners locked in debates about cost allocation and liability. Then something remarkable happened. While mainstream stakeholders debated demolition logistics, marginal figures, graffiti artists, urban adventurers, photographers, and local residents were experiencing the space differently. They discovered wildflowers growing between railroad ties, creating an accidental garden suspended above the city streets. Eventually, Joshua David, a painter, and Robert Hammond, a writer, proposed reimagining the structure as an elevated park. Despite initial dismissal from city planners and real estate developers who saw only liability and decay, the idea gained momentum through Joel Sternfeld's evocative photographs capturing the tracks reclaimed by nature through changing seasons. These images helped others envision the possibility of an urban oasis where others saw only blight. This pattern of transformation through marginal perspectives repeats throughout social change. Ideas that begin as extremist positions, universal suffrage, climate action, marriage equality, racial integration, often evolve into mainstream consensus over time. The women's suffrage movement, initially dismissed as radical, became constitutional law. Environmental protection, once considered fringe activism, is now central to corporate policy. While not all extreme positions prove valuable or viable, societies that systematically silence these voices risk missing transformative paths. The most innovative solutions frequently emerge, not from centrist conventional wisdom, but from those occupying literal or figurative margins who can see possibilities others miss. Obama's team's approach to the Bin Laden operation demonstrates how thoroughly exploring multiple options can reveal unexpected solutions. They developed four distinct options: the original B-2 bombing, effective but with high civilian casualties and destruction of evidence; the special ops raid, a precision drone strike using experimental guided missiles; and a coordinated attack with Pakistani forces. Each option presented unique advantages and risks. Having thoroughly mapped the compound and potential approaches through multiple perspectives, they shifted focus from evidence collection to consequence analysis. This involved modeling not just immediate outcomes, but potential regional and global ripple effects. Effective decision-making requires not just understanding the current system, but predicting how it will change based on your choice, a significantly more difficult challenge. This demands considering both immediate consequences and long-term implications, while remaining open to unconventional perspectives that might reveal previously unseen opportunities. The Highline success demonstrates how transformative change often requires looking beyond conventional frameworks to discover hidden possibilities. Our minds naturally race ahead of the present, constantly contemplating the future. This remarkable capacity for foresight may be humanity's defining attribute, what Martin Seligman calls prospection, suggesting we might better be named Homo prospectus rather than sapiens. This talent for prediction is revealed through neuroscience, where researchers discovered the brain's default network, regions uniquely developed in humans that activate intensely during rest states, primarily engaged in future-oriented thinking. When our minds wander, they're not idle, but actively constructing potential scenarios about what lies ahead. Studies show that approximately 40% of our daily thoughts involve future planning, ranging from mundane tasks like grocery shopping to complex life decisions about careers and relationships. Political scientist Philip Tetlock conducted landmark forecasting tournaments spanning two decades, asking experts to predict future geopolitical and economic events. The results were dismal. Most experts performed no better than random guessing, with media-celebrated pundits performing worst of all. These experts often fell prey to overconfidence, ideological rigidity, and the tendency to see patterns where none existed. However, Tetlock identified a statistically significant group who consistently made better predictions. These foxes versus hedgehogs drew on multiple analytical tools, gathered diverse information, embraced uncertainty, and readily admitted errors. They also scored high on openness to experience, maintaining curiosity about unfamiliar topics rather than dismissing them. The Fox's success rate was about 30% higher than their peers, achieved through methodical analysis, regular updating of beliefs, and a willingness to change their minds when new evidence emerged. Darwin's repeated visits to the Malvern Water Cure Clinic, despite his skepticism of its founder's methods, highlights the primitive state of Victorian medicine. Treatments like ice water dousing and wet sheet wrapping had no medical value beyond placebo effects, yet outperformed other common interventions like bloodletting and arsenic. This medical incompetence stemmed from doctors' inability to predict treatment outcomes reliably. Victorian physicians often relied on anecdotal evidence and traditional practices, leading to treatments that frequently caused more harm than good. The breakthrough came in 1948 with Austin Bradford Hill's tuberculosis study, the first randomized controlled trial in medical history. By using large sample sizes and randomly selected control groups, RCTs created a tool for distinguishing effective treatments from quackery. This revolutionary approach to medical testing established the foundation for evidence-based medicine, dramatically improving our ability to predict treatment outcomes and save lives. Modern clinical trials now require thousands of participants and multiple phases of testing, reducing the influence of chance and bias in medical predictions. The predictive mind's power extends beyond individual decision-making into collective intelligence. When properly structured, crowd predictions often outperform individual experts, as demonstrated by prediction markets and forecasting tournaments. However, our predictive abilities have limitations. We tend to overestimate our capabilities in familiar situations while underestimating risks in novel ones. Understanding these cognitive biases is crucial for improving our predictive accuracy and decision-making quality. Robert Fitzroy, Darwin's former captain from the Beagle Voyage, established the first scientific weather forecasts after the devastating Royal Charter Storm of 1859. Working from the meteorological department he founded, Fitzroy set up a network of coastal stations that transmitted weather readings via telegraph to London. Despite limited technology, his team created meteorological charts and made predictions based on historical pattern recognition. Over decades, weather forecasting evolved from Fitzroy's basic methods to sophisticated computer modeling and ensemble forecasting, which runs thousands of simulations with slightly varied initial conditions. When making difficult choices, we're implicitly predicting future events. The success of medical randomized controlled trials and weather forecasting offers valuable lessons for decision-making. Both achieve their accuracy through multiple simulations. RCTs track thousands of patients, while weather models run thousands of atmospheric scenarios with slight variations. Social and geopolitical forecasts remain less reliable precisely because they lack this simulation capability. In April 2011, SEAL Team 6 simulated the raid on Bin Laden's compound at Fort Bragg using an exact physical reconstruction. Later, they conducted another simulation in Nevada at the same elevation as Abbottabad to test helicopter performance in high-altitude conditions. These simulations weren't merely practice runs, but crucial parts of the decision-making process, helping identify potential problems before committing to the mission. War games have a long history as decision-making tools, from the Prussian military's dice-based Kriegsspiel in the 19th century to the U.S. Navy's fleet problems in the 1930s. These simulations help decision-makers discover unknown unknowns and explore possibilities that might never occur through conventional analysis alone. Scenario planning differs from traditional forecasting by embracing uncertainty rather than trying to predict a single outcome. As Pierre Wack, who famously anticipated the 1970s oil crisis, explained, "Uncertainty today is not just an occasional temporary deviation from reasonable predictability. It is a basic structural feature of the business environment." By imagining multiple possible futures, scenario planning helps decision makers perceive options more clearly and avoid the fallacy of extrapolation. To overcome our natural storytelling biases when scenario planning, Gary Klein developed the pre-mortem technique, imagining a future where your plan has failed and working backward to explain why. This approach yields richer explanations than simply asking what might go wrong, as research shows people develop more nuanced reasoning when analyzing hypothetical events presented as having already occurred. Military red teams serve a similar function by systematically role-playing adversaries. During the Bin Laden operation planning, counterterrorism officials deliberately employed red teams to avoid repeating the intelligence failures of the Iraq WMD investigation. A fresh team of analysts explored alternative explanations for the compound's occupants, ultimately rating Bin Laden's presence as less than 50% likely, but more probable than any other single scenario. Mapping, predicting, and simulating don't quite add up to deciding. Once you've mapped the landscape, determined potential options, and simulated outcomes with as much certainty as possible, how do you choose? Linear value modeling, LVM, offers a mathematical approach to decision-making that Darwin might have used for his marriage dilemma. The process requires listing your core values, weighting each based on importance, grading each option on how well it addresses those values, then multiplying the grades by weights and adding them up. The highest scoring scenario wins. In government, regulatory impact analysis, mandated since Reagan's 1981 Executive Order 1229, applies similar cost-benefit calculations to proposed regulations. Though initially seen as conservative, this framework has persisted through six administrations with bipartisan support. The Obama administration used it to establish the social cost of carbon at $36 per ton, making energy policy decisions more far-sighted by incorporating future climate impacts into present-day calculations. Google's 2012 patent for autonomous vehicle decision-making reveals how algorithms can compress deliberative processes into nanoseconds. The patent includes a bad events table that assigns risk magnitude scores and probability percentages to potential hazards, from hitting pedestrians to sensor failures, calculating a risk penalty for each possible action. For human decision makers facing complex choices, creating a similar table helps prevent fixating only on likely positive outcomes. The most important work in decision making lies in framing the decision and overcoming bounded rationality, exploring multiple perspectives, building scenario plans, and identifying new options. With thorough mapping and predicting, the choice often becomes self-evident. Our brain's default network excels at mulling over complicated decisions and imagining different outcomes. But our visibility is often limited. The mapping and predicting stages provide more material for this processing. After using state-of-the-art strategies like pre-mortems, scenario plans, and stakeholder charrettes to widen perspective, the best approach is often to let it all sink in. Go for long walks, linger in the shower, let the mind wander. Hard choices demand overriding System 1 thinking and keeping an open mind to new possibilities. In the United States, gerrymandering and demographic big sort have created increasingly homogeneous decision-making groups, with Democrats clustering in cities and inner-ring suburbs, while Republicans dominate exurbs and rural areas. This political homogeneity undermines effective group decision-making. The lack of diversity in leadership groups isn't just an egalitarian concern. Diverse groups make demonstrably smarter decisions. Research shows gender diversity is particularly important. All male groups are more likely to make poor choices about any issue, not just women's issues. Despite these challenges, we've expanded our decision-making horizons in unprecedented ways. People now routinely factor in long-term environmental impacts that would have been unthinkable to previous generations. While skeptics point to unprecedented environmental destruction as evidence of worsening decisions, humans have always been as ecologically destructive as their technology allowed. The difference now is our growing capacity to anticipate problems before they emerge. How far could our decision-making horizons extend? While individuals naturally make life-spanning choices about marriage, children, and careers, society now grapples with century-spanning decisions about climate, AI, and urban planning. Evidence suggests properly designed internet platforms can harness collective intelligence effectively. The Obama administration's 2008 Citizens Briefing Book experiment, which prioritized marijuana legalization despite media mockery, proved prescient as these policies gained mainstream acceptance years later. Supercomputers like Cheyenne have granted us two forms of farsightedness. They help predict climate futures while simultaneously suggesting the trajectory of artificial intelligence itself, potentially an existential threat. As Moore's Law continues and machine learning advances, scientists and tech leaders warn that superintelligent machines could endanger humanity. The threat isn't the science fiction scenario of conscious, malevolent machines. Rather, it's the risk of miscommunicated goals. A superintelligence tasked with maximizing human happiness might distribute pleasure center-stimulating nanobots, technically achieving its objective while creating a horrifying outcome. Or, when asked to solve environmental problems, it might eliminate humans as the primary cause. This containment problem is profoundly difficult because humans would be attempting to outsmart an intelligence vastly superior to our own, like mice trying to prevent humans from inventing mousetraps. Most AI researchers believe superhuman intelligence remains at least 50 years away, giving us time to prepare. If we can maintain our unprecedented multi-generational focus. The Drake equation elegantly connects multiple intellectual disciplines to frame the likelihood of detecting intelligent life in our galaxy. The most provocative variable is L, the average lifespan of a signal-transmitting civilization. A high L value suggests civilizations can become self-sustaining for millions of years, while a low value raises troubling questions. Do technological civilizations routinely destroy themselves? Since 1961, our estimate of habitable planets has increased dramatically, yet we've detected no signals. This silence suggests either that life itself is incredibly rare, or that technological civilizations have short lifespans, perhaps because advanced technology inevitably leads to self-destruction. our best hope may be developing far-sighted decision-making capabilities faster than we develop new ways of destroying ourselves. The author reveals that this book originated from his own life-changing decision to move from Brooklyn to California after 20 years in New York. Despite his carefully constructed arguments, even creating a PowerPoint presentation for his wife, he discovered his map was incomplete. His wife's perspective emphasized social connections, the 20-year friendships and community they'd built in Brooklyn, and political concerns about trading walkable urbanism for car-dependent suburbia. Their compromise, a 2-year California experiment with the option to return, seemed reasonable but proved traumatic for their marriage. His wife felt isolated while he traveled for work, creating a vast perspective gap. She was miserable, I was liberated. Eventually, they found middle ground in a bi-coastal lifestyle, though the author reflects that better decision-making techniques might have eased their transition. Around age 40, the author returned to reading novels after years focused on nonfiction, finding himself drawn to their narrative companionship as he began to see the longer arc of his life. Rereading George Eliot's Middlemarch, he recognized it as a masterful portrait of decision-making across multiple dimensions. Unlike narrow-band novels that focus solely on interior thoughts or social dynamics, Middlemarch operates across the full spectrum, connecting private emotional moments to broader political contexts and showing how technological changes ripple through personal relationships. This full-spectrum approach mirrors how complex decisions work in real life. The novel centers on Dorothea Brooke's decision after her disappointing marriage to Edward Casaubon, a dull scholar whose secret will codicil would disinherit her if she marries his cousin Will Ladislaw, the man with whom she's developed an intense connection. Unlike Jane Austen's simpler emotional versus economic dilemmas, Eliot presents Dorothea's choice as multidimensional, spanning emotional attraction, family implications, career aspirations, community standing, economic consequences, technological changes, and historical political movements. When making complex personal decisions, we benefit most from time and fresh perspective. Novels like Middlemarch offer us parallel lives and complex experiences rather than simple prescriptions. They function similarly to ensemble forecasts, freeing us from the bottleneck of individual experience by letting us immerse in orchestrated, imagined experiences. Our evolutionary appetite for fictional narratives helps us develop theory of mind, the ability to imagine others' subjective experiences, which is crucial for decision-making. The novel excels at capturing hard choices across all scales of experience, from the inner life of decision-makers to the sweep of generational change. As a technology, the novel amplifies the default network's instinctual storytelling capacity, functioning like a Hubble telescope for our mental simulations. Cultural forms like novels develop to create ever more elaborate simulations, allowing us to rehearse life's hard choices before making our own. Unlike weather forecasts that simulate physical phenomena, novels offer something more intimate, the path of a human life changing and being changed by its surrounding world.